to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. Once again, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. I want to thank you again for being here with me today to talk about NXT from this past week. Very interesting show we had this week. We're going to have a lot to talk about, whether it was what was happening in the ring or what was happening behind the scenes. I'm very excited to talk to you about it today. Very excited you gave me a chance and are going to listen to me for the next 40 or so minutes. Now, generally here on the NXT Podcast, we will also cover the news from the wrestling world before we jump into the show itself. And there's not necessarily a ton of news. There's a couple stories that haven't really fleshed themselves out yet that we're going to wait on before we put our own thoughts onto it. But I was thinking, as a news item was released, that WWE is willing to grant a release to almost anybody at this point. And it got me to thinking. We're going to try a thought experiment, me and you. I want you to close your eyes for me. I mean, if you're driving or something, don't close your eyes, obviously. But if you're at home, just close your eyes for me and just listen to the sounds of my sultry, kind of annoying voice. I want you to picture that you are a WWE superstar. You signed on to WWE. Maybe you're a lifelong fan. Maybe you're somebody that showed an aptitude for this kind of thing. You go through all of your training, or you go through the independent circuits, and now you've made it to the big time. I'm proud of you, by the way. Good job. I told you could do it. You were all like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. I was like, you can. And now here you are, if you would have just listened to me. But now, you're performing for thousands and thousands of fans in arenas. You're getting great reactions. You're having great matches. You're making the most of each opportunity that's given to you. And then I want you to picture that your boss, Vince McMahon, decides that rather than giving his full focus to the wrestling company that he's brought to unprecedented heights, he's going to restart the XFL. Now, you are WWE superstar, so proud of you. Recognize the XFL as the football league that did not succeed. It's a football league that folded. It's a football league that tried to be a football and wrestling league, which nobody asked for, nobody wanted, and they showed that. And after it closed all these years later, your boss decides that he really wants to give it another go, really wants to do that. And so you think to yourself, well, that's a bit odd, that's not ideal, he's probably not going to be able to focus as much on the creative process and all the things it takes to do a successful company, but fine. So he's already dividing his attention. Then I want you to picture this virus hits. So while your boss is distracted, you're having to go out there, and now you're performing for no fans. You're performing to an empty arena. You know that there are people watching at home, but it's not quite the same now. You as a performer probably don't feel like you're giving your best because everything that you've heard from the other wrestlers, or I'm sorry, sports entertainers, because those are very different, is that they feed off of a crowd. And then you start to notice that the television ratings for your product have gone down since this has happened because, as it turns out, people aren't as willing to watch wrestling that doesn't take place in front of a crowd because you lose something. And then I want you to picture that a bunch of your friends, maybe mentors, maybe opponents, maybe tag team partners, get released. and you're maybe given a 4-minute conference warning about it, that there are going to be releases. And then you get text from a lot of your friends saying, I was cut. Some of those friends are guys who were in the Night 1 WrestleMania main event, played a pivotal role in that. Some of them are former show general managers who you know are fantastic in the ring, but for some reason didn't get a chance to show it. Some of them are referees that have been with the company longer than anybody. Some of them are producers that probably helped you along the way, and you don't see why those people would be furloughed or released. Some of them are wrestlers, sports entertainers, that you know are fantastic, but were never given a chance because your boss, who again decided to restart a football league nobody asked for, just got bored with them. And then I want you to picture that a lawsuit comes against your boss, Vince McMahon, because he, at best, shadily decided to shut down the XFL because of this virus. And he is now being sued by the commissioner of that league, Oliver Luck, for essentially breaching the contract that he signed by just trying to fire him, get rid of the league, and file for bankruptcy. And then I want you to picture that some of the shareholders for WWE as a publicly traded company are suing Vince and the WWE for, lack of better terminology, negligent behavior. And with all of these things going through your head at the same time, you find out that the dividend payments were issued for WWE stockholders, and you think to yourself, and you do some calculations, and you think, boy oh boy, this is a company run by millionaires that cut people for no reason. You look around to other wrestling companies and see that no releases have happened from any of those companies. Quite the contrary. Some companies are still paying people that they had not officially wrestled for yet. Some companies are taking people that have signed but have not wrestled and are still paying them. Companies that do not do as well as the company you are in, because it's the right thing to do. Meanwhile, your company has just cut a lot of your friends, maybe mentors, maybe referees, maybe opponents, maybe partners, for no apparent reason other than to save money that they didn't need to save, while they continue to get richer and richer based on your hard work. And so, with all of those things, presuming that you are a WWE superstar who, let's say, has made some money and is pretty comfortable at the moment, and all you've heard from this company is that we're a family, and we're going to do what's best for you, and now you realize that those were just lies, those were just bold-faced lies. Because as soon as something bad happens and they see the possibility of making less money, not no money, not running in a negative, making less money, they decide to just cut bait. And so if you really think about it and you open your eyes, other than the idea that there aren't going to be a lot of jobs going around, when there do become more openings in your profession as you open your eyes, why would you want to stay with a company like that? Why would you want to stay with a company that you now know does not value you as a person or particularly a performer so much as a number on a spreadsheet? And if that number exceeds what they think it should, they're just going to cut bait with you. Meanwhile, you're expected to make all of these shows, to not complain, to dress appropriately as a superstar would, and to give up your body and your time and your health you're constantly judged on what you do. You're always making the wrong decision. If you do something that seems like no big deal, you get this mystery heat. Or maybe you don't, and maybe they just get bored with you, and you're told creative has nothing for you. The reason I had you go through this exercise is that the way that WWE has run their business through this pandemic, I think has hopefully opened a lot of people's eyes. And I never want a company to do poorly. But in this case, they've demonstrated to you that they simply are not good people. And I think that when you show people that you aren't good as a person, they're a lot less likely to work for you. And that's not the kind of thing that I would want happening when Impact Wrestling is very successful, AEW is very successful and often beats NXT in the ratings. I don't know that I would want to push people away just to make a little bit more than I currently am when I'm already a millionaire. And so the point here is that you can do that, and that might help your books in the short term, but it would seem to me that this is going to cause a lot more problems for them in the long term. And frankly, they've earned every bit of it. But if you'll give me just a moment to step down off of my soapbox, I would love to talk with you about NXT from this week. It was an interesting show, as I said. We start with a recap of the Cruiserweight tournament thus far, and Charlotte Flair arriving at the arena. You'll be remembered that Charlotte is the NXT Women's Champion, and you'll also remember that I love that decision so much. She's going to be so good for the NXT. I'm super happy about it. So, we're starting with a Cruiserweight tournament match. We have Isaiah Swerve Scott. He's out first. He is 0-1 in the tournament. He lost his first match to Kushida. And we have Jake Atlas and Akira Tozawa and Kushida and Phantasma, who are 1-0 in this tournament so far. Remember, we have a group A, we have a group B. You fight everybody in your group, and whoever has the best record moves on to a singles match for the title. And then we have El Hijo del Fantasma coming out next. And it was an alright match, I suppose. It was very kind of slow and methodical, which doesn't really match what you usually see with the Cruiserweight style and what this tournament has been thus far. Like I said, it was really slow, not necessarily the most interesting, but Mauro Ranallo and Beth Phoenix, who were on commentary, really helped this match a lot. It's very hard to have a bad match when Mauro is calling it, because he makes everything feel important and things feel impactful that maybe aren't. And we have a quick roll-up by Swerve. He pins Phantasma, and so Swerve and Phantasma are both 1-1 in the tournament. And again, we're fighting for the best record, then we'll have a one-on-one match to determine the interim Cruiserweight champion. And then Swerve is interviewed after. It was a pretty good interview. I realized that I hadn't heard Swerve talk very much, so hopefully he gets a chance to do that more as this tournament goes along. And we cut from that to a Damian Priest promo in the back. He says that the running is over. I finally get to finish what I started. When the night's over, Keith Lee, you'll be the one that gets to bask in the glory of the new North American champion. And then we have Adam Cole, who's actually in the building today. So that's good. And we find out that it's going to be Adam Cole versus the Velveteen Dream for the NXT title next week on NXT. And Adam says that the Dream still doesn't deserve a title shot, but he will show up as the greatest and longest reigning NXT champion that's ever been. And the Dream, it will be over. And then we cut back to the arena, and Mia Yim is out. And then Charlotte Flair is out. And it occurs to me that I forgot that this match was happening. and I forgot it's happening because it doesn't feel important. And it doesn't feel like there's stakes. Mia Yim doesn't win very much. And Charlotte, as a champion here, feels like a temporary band-aid for NXT that NXT did not need. NXT was doing great with the women's division, and now it feels like we're kind of stopping everything because Charlotte Flair is the champion, and so we're kind of just waiting for her to lose the title to one of these people, and it appears as though really the only person that's going to come out maybe better for this is whoever beats Charlotte for the NXT title. And so it occurs to me as they're doing the introductions that this match is a non-title match, so I further do not understand the point of it. My initial thought when they were setting this up was that this was going to be a title match and Mia was getting the first shot at the women's championship, but apparently it's just an opportunity for Mia to prove herself. It's not. They never said that if Mia wins, she gets a title shot. It's just a match for the sake of a match. And so there's a couple of interesting spots. I suppose Mia Yim, as she's being thrown into the ropes, catches herself on the top and middle rope like Andrade does to taunt Charlotte, because Andrade and Charlotte are engaged, so that was funny. And then it was an okay match, and then Charlotte locks in the figure eight and Mia Yim taps out. So the notes that I wrote down is that the figure eight is a kind of a dumb-looking finishing move. It doesn't seem like you arching your back would increase the pressure on that hold, and it just feels like a contrived way of reminding you that she is Ric Flair's daughter, but her own person, which it does not accomplish either. And so this match had no stakes. It was not important. And now Mia Yim does not feel like a bigger deal, like I thought the point of this was. Mia Yim now feels like a character that's not ready to be anywhere near the title picture, which is what she felt like before the match. So Charlotte gave her a chance in this story that we're telling, and not only did Mia Yim not win, she didn't step up to the plate at all, character-wise. It never felt like Charlotte was in danger in this match. Several times she would go for a cover, only get a two count, and Charlotte would be smiling. And that came across as somebody who is not worried that the babyface is fighting against them. They're sure that they're going to win, and they're not worried about it. And character-wise, for Charlotte, that makes sense, because she's a heel, so that works. But for Mia, if you're thinking about it, this is the biggest match that she's had in NXT. And so it would seem as though you would at least want to have a situation where she takes Charlotte to the absolute limit, and Charlotte maybe has to cheat to beat Mia Yim. There was no universe in which Mia Yim was winning this match, but you could have done what I thought the point of this was, which was to get other people over. That's not what we did. And now I don't know what you do with Mia Yim, because she's clearly not a contender for the NXT Women's title. She's, as a character, clearly not ready for that. The person, Mia Yim, is the character in this story we're telling, is not even close. And so this seems like a situation where you would be moved to the back of the line because you showed us nothing that would indicate that you should have been in this spot in the first place, other than you happened to be Charlotte's first match. Then Charlotte wipes the floor with you, is never pressed, and makes you tap out. So when we originally put the NXT Women's title on Charlotte Flair, again, I thought that the point of this was that Charlotte was going to come to NXT and start putting people over. And by that, I don't mean losing. You don't have to lose to put somebody over, but you can construct a match and a story in such a way that Charlotte is trying everything she can as a heel. The babyface always looks strong against her, kind of like Ric Flair, because I don't know if you know, but Charlotte's Ric Flair's daughter. They don't mention it very much. Like Ric Flair did when he was NWA champion, he would go to these individual territories as a heel, and he would face whoever their most popular or best babyface was. And Ric Flair's job in that scenario was to, although he would generally win, he would make that babyface look like a million bucks. And generally, you would have a situation where the babyface looks like they're going to win until Ric Flair escapes by the skin of his teeth. This does a few things. It establishes Ric Flair as a heel champion, where you respect that he is the champion, but you know he had to lie, cheat, and steal to keep that championship. And, more importantly, for whatever territory Ric went to, that babyface is now much better off for having been in the ring with Ric Flair, because now that babyface can say next week that Ric Flair came here as the NWA World's Champion, and I took him to his limit. Ric Flair, you know I had you. You knew you were beat. You knew that title was slipping out of your hands, and so you had to turn to cheating. You had to hit me with a low blow. You had to poke me in the eye. You had to take out the referee. You had to do something to give yourself an advantage, because you knew in a fair fight I would take you one-on-one and I would have taken your NWA championship. By this point, Ric Flair is long gone. He's on to the next territory. But because that babyface now got the rub from Ric Flair, that babyface is now much more over than they were. They're much more credible than they were. And the next time Ric Flair comes through, the fans are even more sure that my guy can absolutely become the champion. You increase business the next time. This is the whole model that this was built off of. The whole point of being the champion in that era was that you maintain the championship and the prestige thereof, and you were able to build other people up. And I say that to say, if we were going to take Charlotte from the main roster and put her on NXT, you would think that you would want to do something similar. You now have a main roster competitor who started on NXT. She's the first two-time NXT Women's Champion. And you have a situation where you have an opportunity for Charlotte to take all of her skills, which are substantial. While I question this move, I never question that Charlotte Flair is an incredible in-ring performer. Her promos usually leave something to be desired for me, but in the ring, you can't do a lot better than Charlotte. And when you have somebody like that, you would think, because she is a heel and she is now the champion, you're going to have baby faces chasing, that you can use that opportunity. So you can put her against Mia Yim and have her eventually win, but either have to cheat to win or have to use a bunch of unfair advantages so that you come out of it thinking, dang it, Charlotte won, but Mia almost had her. That's the most important thing. The babyface almost had them. And at no point during this match or during this build-up did it ever once feel like Mia had Charlotte or had Charlotte's number or even had an opportunity to have Charlotte. It felt like from the beginning that Charlotte was giving Mia a gift. Charlotte was saying, you were my first match in NXT. You helped me become a star, so now I'm going to help you become one. Last week she said that Mia was a good hand, which is generally wrestling parlance for, you're good, but you're nothing special. Now that's a fine story to tell if Mia either beats her, because this was non-title, or the right decision, I think, is for Charlotte to win, but barely escape by the skin of her teeth. In that scenario, Mia Yim comes off better. She comes off looking more credible than she ever has. She can take that momentum on to the next thing she does, and you start to see cracks in the armor of Charlotte as she goes through competitors. Yes, she's keeping the championship, but she's only barely doing so. In the scenario that we actually got, Charlotte dominated the story by basically giving out a freebie to Mia Yim for no earned reason. Every time Mia Yim gets an opportunity, she does not capitalize on it. And then we took that story, we put them in the ring, and we created a scenario in which Charlotte was never in danger of being pinned. Charlotte never had to do anything particularly underhanded to Mia Yim, because Charlotte Flair was by far the better woman. She beat Mia Yim down. Mia got offense in, but never anything to such a point that I felt she was going to win. And then Mia Yim just tapped out. And so with this story you've built, you've kept Charlotte the same. You've put a match that immediately felt like it was a disappointment and had no stakes. And you've made Mia Yim worse for it. Because for all that bluster and all that babyface fire that you were supposed to have, you didn't get the job done, and you didn't look like you were even qualified to be in that job. So I don't know what they do with Mia Yim here. Mia Yim kind of feels like the Dolph Ziggler of NXT, somebody who's very good in the ring and very good in stories that they're in, but it would seem as though they're never going to be the one. So Mia Yim's not going to be a Rhea Ripley where you build that story and then she eventually wins the title. I'm not saying that would have been the right decision. I agree with Charlotte winning, but the next time Mia is in a feud, I'm more confident now than I was, which was already pretty confident, that she's going to lose. Because when you get labeled as a quote-unquote good hand, like Dolph Ziggler, like Mia Yim, those people don't get the opportunities. Those are the people that the new up-and-comers work with and then beat because they think you have some kind of credibility as a character. But if you put people in stories like this, after being on a losing streak and then last week giving them one win to try and make us forget about that, that's not what happens. They often like to say that wins and losses don't matter in the WWE, and that's simply not true. The reason this story was disappointing is because Mia Yim has lost a lot. And she lost here in more ways than one. We've talked a lot about on all of these podcasts how there's been a lot of moments that would have been really, really cool in front of a live crowd. Edge at WrestleMania, Drew McIntyre's WWE title run. A lot of these things would be very interesting. This, I think, would have been a dud, because this was not an engaging story, this is not particularly interesting competitors, and it was kind of a thrown-together story that was done very quickly. And watch this transition. And speaking of Rush stories, you see what I did there? I'm a professional. As Charlotte's coming up the ramp, Io Shirai's music hits, and she comes out, and she's yelling at Charlotte and just says, "Next week you're mine." And so apparently next week we're just doing Io versus Charlotte for the NXT title with no real build. I mean, Io won the opportunity to be number one contender, and then they had one or two video packages of the two of them that didn't have anything to do with each other. And now Io randomly comes out and challenges Charlotte for next week. So again, we're doing it with no real build for a title that I don't think Charlotte's losing yet. This is only going to be her second feud since winning the title in NXT. I highly doubt that they brought her here just to beat Mia Yim once and then lose the title to Io Shirai. It occurred to me that I don't know that Charlotte's going to stick around NXT after she loses the title, so I don't think she's going to lose it to Io yet. So one of two things are going to happen. Either Io Shirai is going to lose, in which case you now have to build somebody else up to this spot, and it kind of feels like a waste that Io got the opportunity in the first place, or Io Shirai wins, becomes the champion. That's good, but then you have Charlotte Flair, who either is just going to be on the NXT roster, which for her character doesn't make sense. I don't know why she would stick around if she's not the champion. And you have a situation where she may just go back to the main roster, which means that there was no point in her beating Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania, which is what I said when she beat Rhea Ripley. So either way, it kind of feels like you lose. So, I mean, I don't own a wrestling company, but that seems counterproductive. Call me crazy. And then we get a Killer Cross video package with Scarlett. Pretty standard for them, and then flashes on the screen next week. So I presume that's going to be his in-ring debut. I don't know if Ciampa is going to be back from the attack, if we're going to go through that, or if he's going to have an enhancement talent to kind of run over. But I'm definitely ready to just see this character now. It's the promo videos have all been roughly the same, except for the attack on Ciampa. And they were effective the first few weeks, and this time I kind of felt my eyes glaze over a bit just because it's a lot of the same images, a lot of the same everything. This one had Scarlett doing the actual promo, so that was better. But I'm definitely ready to see this character, or rather these characters, in the ring. And so hopefully we get that next week and we'll have an actual character, not just a video package. And then we have a Keith Lee promo in the back. He's talking very softly. Remember that Damian Priest hit him in the throat with that nightstick. And so Keith Lee says that he has a bruised larynx. Says he's hurt, but he says that you want to live forever. But he says that Priest will live in infamy when you go through this beating that I'm about to give you. And so we have Tony Nese out next. This is our second Cruiserweight title tournament match. And then we get Drake Maverick out next. And him being in this tournament without technically having a job still feels gross. This is a person that was an excellent general manager and then was put in a stupid management position for Authors of Pain when they already had a manager that they fired. And then he didn't fit with the group. Somebody just thought it would be funny because you guys get it, because he's short and they're tall. Do you guys get it? No, you guys didn't get it. And then he's released for no good reason. And then he puts out a video on Twitter just going through his very raw, very real, very touching emotions about being released. And happens to mention that he is in the Cruiserweight title tournament and he's still going to fill those obligations. And WWE saw fit to use that, because of all the attention it got, to craft a story during this tournament. And the thing is, Drake is either going to lose in this tournament, which means that he's just fired and you did this story for no reason, or you pay off this story in the only way that you can, which is that Drake Maverick wins the tournament, wins the interim cruiserweight title, and then presumably gets to keep his job. But that feels weird when you have other performers that were released that aren't getting the same chance in storyline. So whichever way you do it, it just feels gross. It feels gross to have him still in this tournament, risking his health for something that's not promised and a job's not promised. They're just going to use this for a bit more traffic to their show. And whichever way you go with it, it just feels bad. And I feel bad for him because he's doing the right thing. He's fulfilling his obligations, but he's doing so for a company that clearly doesn't care about him, doesn't value him very much, and just happens to want to leech off of the popularity of a very emotional video that he put out after he found out he was fired during a pandemic. But here we go, I really want to be Cruiserweight champion. And they're having the match, it's a very good match. Drake's a really good wrestler, and I don't understand why they didn't let him wrestle before. He was almost never in the ring. He was doing a bunch of 24/7 championship stuff, which devolved. It was very good when him and R-Truth were going back and forth, but then they would have mobs of people chasing the one 24/7 champion, and so he never really got a chance to actually wrestle. He was just performing in skits, and he's good at that as well, but he's an excellent wrestler, and I had forgotten that because it had been so long since I got to see him wrestle. But we have an excellent match where Tony Nese is beating on Drake Maverick, and Drake is selling very hard and having to fight back just to kind of try and stave off Tony Nese, who's bigger and appears to be stronger. And so we end up with basically Tony Nese is sitting on the top rope, and Drake hits a wheelbarrow bulldog from the top rope, which looked excellent. Seems like it would be a hard move to pull off for both guys, but he hits it perfectly, and Drake Maverick wins, and he improves to 1-1. And then one of the commentators says that Drake Maverick is still fighting to keep his job in the WWE. Again, gross. And then we have a Drake Maverick interview, and then he says, "I did it. I told you I would. And Kushida, you're next. I'm not leaving because I love this, and I'm not stopping until I'm the Cruiserweight champion." And for as gross as this story is, Drake Maverick comes off like a real person going through something real, because that's what it is. And he comes off as more of a star than he ever did in WWE. So, if he does get a job with WWE, again, gross, then he'll have something to launch forward with. And if he doesn't get a job with WWE, which would just be infuriating at this point, he has something to carry on to the independents or to AEW or Impact, wherever he decides to go. So either way, hopefully Drake Maverick can come out of this better. Not for anything to do with WWE or the creative behind it, but solely because of him and the way that he's been able to deal with this. And so it's main event time. Damian Priest is challenging Keith Lee again for the NXT North American Championship. And so Damian Priest comes out first. Damian Priest has a pretty cool entrance. I was never really sure why he did the bow and arrow thing without a real bow and arrow. That feels weird. But he does it to turn his name on the top Titantron of the ring. It's a cool entrance. He's a cool character. He just hasn't had a lot to do on the main roster. It's kind of the same thing as a Dolph Ziggler or a Mia Yim to a lesser degree, where he's in these good stories, but then he loses. And so Keith Lee is out next. He is our North American champion. Usually Keith Lee has a smile on his face and he's posing with the title, mouthing some of the lyrics to his theme that he performs. This time he's not doing that. He is holding the championship and he's walking down to the ring. His eyes never leave Damian Priest. He looks real pissed off. He looks like a guy that was attacked by another guy and now wants nothing more than the opportunity to beat the hell out of him for what he's done. It really feels like two guys that hate each other. And so we do the introductions of the challenger and the champion. Usually when you do those, both performers will pose after their name is called. In this case, Keith Lee and Damian Priest don't take their eyes off of each other. They're standing very close. It's funny because they can't stand face to face because that's not the shot that they want. So they're facing each other, but they're looking at each other from the side, like when somebody from WWE has to watch a TV and they can't just look at it straight on. But they introduce Damian Priest. All he does is he smiles very slightly at Keith Lee. They introduce Keith Lee. All he does is put the title on his shoulder, stare daggers into Damian Priest, and hand the title belt off to the referee. Again, it really feels like two guys that hate each other. This is actually really well done by both of them. And it's a pretty good story that we've got here. It's been inadvertently set up well with Damian Priest being in the North American title picture, but he's not the one that got beat in that triple threat match. It was Dominik Dijakovic. And so Damian Priest as a heel still has a leg to stand on, saying that Keith Lee picks people that he knows he can beat for title matches, and that with a win over Keith Lee, I should be North American champion and you haven't beaten me. And as the match is going on, Keith Lee is hitting Damian Priest hard, and Damian Priest is flying around the ring to sell for him. It's making Keith Lee look more impressive than he already does. And Keith Lee can look impressive by himself, but when you have somebody like Damian Priest in there who can sell really well, and he can feed a comeback really well, and he can just fly around the ring, it makes Keith Lee look 10 times more powerful than he already does. And so you need matches like this where it's competitive, but Keith Lee comes out looking even better than he did. And a lot of that has to do with Damian Priest, so I have to give him credit. Because without Damian Priest, Keith Lee would still be in a good spot, but I feel like it elevated both of them. Imagine that, an actual title match where both people are elevated. Who would have thought? Huh? Who would have thought? And Damian Priest eventually has had enough. He goes out to the side, and he picks up the North American title, and he also picks up the nightstick. He stands on the apron. He has the nightstick down so the referee can't see it, and the referee takes the title belt from him, and as the referee is overdoing that, Damian Priest comes up to Keith Lee, and he goes to hit him with the nightstick, but Keith Lee catches Damian Priest's arm. He rises up and says, "I told you, I am limitless." He takes the nightstick, he hands it to the referee, and then he ends up hitting two power bombs. They're not really spirit bombs, but the spirit bomb's basically a last ride, but these were just power bombs. He power bombs him, picks him back up. Not easy, because Damian Priest is a big dude. Power bombs him again, and gets the three count. Keith Lee is still your North American champion. This was an excellent match. If you can only watch one match from this week, this is the one you want to watch. This is the complete opposite. If a live crowd were here, they would have been loving this. They would have been going insane. There was so much great stuff in here, and that three count would have gotten a huge reaction. I thought Damian Priest might win. I wasn't sure if they were going to maybe try and put Keith Lee on the main roster, which will happen eventually, but I didn't know if they wanted to continue the story with Keith Lee or if they wanted to kind of move on, but I'm always happy to see Keith Lee winning. He's one of my favorite wrestlers in the world right now. In the ring and on promos, he's fantastic, and sometimes guys just have a special it factor, mythical it factor that you can't quite quantify, but you know it when you see it. Well, I know it when I see it with Keith Lee. And he makes a great North American champion. The title feels the most important it's felt since Adam Cole first won it in the ladder match to crown the first champion. And a lot of that has to do with Keith Lee. It's a situation kind of like when Seth Rollins won the Intercontinental title, where it feels more important because it's on the guy who's usually in main events or puts on the best matches of the night. Keith Lee's a guy who's capable of doing that. And I think the North American title's been great for Keith Lee and vice versa. So hopefully we can continue this story. I'm not sure who's next for Keith Lee, but if he does eventually lose that title, I'll be very interested to see him on Raw or SmackDown as well. Hopefully they don't misuse him or forget he's there, or get bored of him, or decide he's not over enough, or decide he's not a good locker room guy, or decide that he's not giving them what they want in the ring, but not telling them exactly what they want, or giving him a stupid character, or scripting him so that he doesn't sound like himself, or not letting him do what he does in the ring to get over, or change his gimmick so that he looks stupid and people can't take him seriously, or anything like that. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully we get the Survivor Series version of Keith Lee, where he's absolutely hanging with the top stars like Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, eliminating Seth Rollins, just barely getting beat by Roman Reigns. So if that does happen, hopefully we get a great outcome from it. And ladies and gentlemen, with that, that is your NXT show from this week. Like I said, an interesting show, definitely not as good as last week, or certainly 2 weeks ago. There wasn't as much interesting wrestling in the actual ring this week. There weren't a lot of promos to kind of do anything with, but it certainly gave us a lot to talk about, or at least me. And I tend to be a very positive person when I'm watching entertainment. I tend to give the benefit of the doubt. In this show, there were just a lot of things that were kind of glaring with the creative process and the creative thinking behind NXT and behind WWE. So I hope that next week, with an NXT title match and apparently with an NXT women's title match, that we get a great show where we can just focus on what's going on in the ring and be happy about it. But for this week, at the very least, it gave us a lot of talking points. And as for talking points, I am glad that you joined me here this week to allow me all those talking points, to allow me my rant. Thank you for closing your eyes at the beginning and picturing it with me. Again, super duper proud of you for making it. Sorry about all those releases. If you want to join in the conversation before next week, you can hit me up on Twitter. I am Zach NXT, ZachNXT on Twitter. I got a few people over there now. They'll send me a message when something interesting happens in wrestling, and we'll talk about it there. Some of those things have ended up on the show. If you have questions, comments, concerns, if you just want to tweet me and say, hey, what's up with this stupid thing that just happened? Be happy to do that too. Again, ZachNXT on Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining me here and allowing me to come into your homes through your devices. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.